going on. So I just want to acknowledge my co-investigators at the University of Calgary for this paper. Sorry, it's not moving forward. So basically, when you study household food insecurity, which is lack of access to food because of financial constraints, you find consistently that individual households that are renters are significantly more likely to be food insecure than those that are homeowners. And public health, of course, is very concerned about food insecurity. The questions would be then, is it because of the types of people who rent compared to those that own that make up this gap in food insecurity? Or is there something unique about being a renter, where you live, how you live, etc.? We all know that housing, as a homeowner or as a renter, has policy responsiveness because we actually can drive people to one or the other by virtue of our policies. So in past research, we did try to answer the question about the difference in food insecurity. Is it between renters and homeowners? Is it because of who rents and who owns? And using a decomposition analysis, we found that 70% of the difference in the gap in prevalence between homeowners and renters is attributable to these sociodemographic characteristics, the income, their household structure, education, etc. But 30% is unexplained by that difference. We've also shown a study that is probably the first to actually show empirically the heat or eat phenomenon that we see in household food insecurity by finding a very serious income shock or budget shock in this period 1998 to 2001, where we were able to show the production of household food insecurity among homeowners who were fully feeling this energy crisis shock compared with the renters who actually had utility control, to show that, in fact, you can induce food insecurity with serious cost issues in the homeowner population. So we all are aware of the recent recession, and Canada was in recession between October 2008 and February 2009. The United States recession preceded that and lagged afterwards. But from what's circled here, you can see the key indicators were very much at play, very dramatic drop in employment, so major unemployment, major changes in disposable income and even housing. So the United States has studied this and its woes of why this the shock occurred, and much of it was thought to be attributable to the kind of a cascade that occurred because of inappropriate home mortgage financing, well described by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and that was thought to play a part of the U.S. counterpart recession. And what I'm looking at is whether or not it was part of the Canadian recession, and it is possible that it was. So in Canada, we have the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, and this is a large federal nonprofit or crown corporation. And what it does is it ensures low and middle-income homeowners around the ability to get a mortgage. And in 2006, just 2 years before the recession, it, along with the United States sort of changes in access to credit, it dramatically changed its regulations, permitting private sector to come in and do this insurance so that people could get mortgages, but most importantly, so you could purchase a home with no down payment and an amortization of over 40 years for your mortgage. You can see from the left-hand side that we had a very hot housing market as well in response, where you see bidding wars and here sold over asking. So we definitely had the same conditions in Canada that were apparent in the United States. So for many years I've been working with national data sets that look at household food insecurity and other factors, and it seemed as if the way that the data were collected is that I had an opportunity to have a natural experiment of the 2008-2009 recession. by having the data that was required to examine before and after, and the question that we could answer is, would a precipitous economic decline and resulting change, you know, be associated with changes in household food insecurity when you consider the housing tenure or the housing type, rental versus owner? The Canadian Community Health Survey is a representative national survey. It has an ongoing two-year collection cycle, and the cycles here are 4.1, which is the 2007-2008 period, which is the before period, before the recession, and you see a very hefty 77,000 approximately sample size of adults over the age of 18. And then the subsequent cycle, 2009-2010, is the after period, again a large sample of over 68,000. The survey uses the Household Food Security Survey module. For those that are studying household food security, you'll recognize that as the module that's been used in the United States for well over a decade. We have, because it's a household measure, then the only sociodemographics that we look at are those that are household, and they are very well known, as you'll see in the literature, and those are the ones that are looked at. As a natural experiment, in terms of its actual design, this would be more akin to a controlled before and after design. Controlled because the type of data that's collected from the before sample is identical and collected in the same way as that in the after, even though it's a different cross-sectional sample. I'll be showing you descriptive analyses that compare the differences in food insecurity and doing some logistic regression analysis to try to tease some of these issues apart. So just to show you the typical examination of what is the gap between food insecurity in the renter population compared to the homeowner population, you see that generally in homeowners, food insecurity is about 3%, whereas it's almost six times higher in the renter population. Now, regardless of the tenure status, food insecurity is consistently, in study after study, higher among women, around household structures which are representing single, divorce, separated, among our non-white or non-Asian population, households led by individuals that have less than a high school education, households that are dependent upon social assistance or welfare, households with children under the age of 12, low-income households, and households, again, where the adult earners are in fair or poor health. So let's look at the two time periods, before and after the recession, and you see that there, in the before period, we're still into this 3 versus 17% gap. It's slightly increased in terms of the second time period, but what's important on this slide is that the male-female discrepancy remains significant for all time periods and for housing tenure, so that females are consistently more food insecure than males, regardless of their tenure situation. This slide will actually answer the entire story, and then I'm going to carry on and talk about it more. But in this slide, we show that if we pool our sample, we do find that there was a significant increase in household food insecurity in all households as a result of the recession. It went up by about a 17% level. And this was almost attributable entirely to the renter population, as you can see from the first column. Household tenure being homeowner is highly protective, and you can see that it's about a half the rate. And then the most important, to answer the question about whether or not the recession differentially was affecting this homeowner group that we've posited in the United States, was important. The answer is no, that in fact housing tenure cycle interaction was not significant. The stratified models are actually quite interesting. So you can see that for both the male and female responder households, there was a significant increase in food insecurity for both men and for women. But perhaps a surprise if you hadn't done stratification is you can see a 26% increase in household food insecurity among male respondent household homeowners, and absolutely no change among the females who would be responding on behalf of their households. The other sort of interesting finding was to examine what happened across our provinces and territories. So the bottom lines are the food insecurity prevalences for the homeowners, and you can see that by a jurisdiction there's virtually no change over the two time periods. However, when you look at the solid line, this is the post-recessionary period. Pre-recessionary is the dashed. And you can see that on the very far left, my province of Alberta is what you would have expected, that the renter population in Alberta has had a higher level of food insecurity because of the recession than before. But in two adjoining provinces, Manitoba to inward and Newfoundland and Labrador, which is the peak, you actually saw the opposite happening, that in fact in the post-recessionary period they had a decrease in food insecurity among their renter population. So just to summarize results before I make some comments about them, so after adjustment we did see that renter households of either sex did experience a significant increase in household food insecurity as a result of the recession, but it was also found to be so among male homeowners. And we saw an interesting regional variation in food insecurity across renters and homeowners in cycles that were not necessarily consistent with recessionary changes. So home ownership is actually very important. It in our society, it is a hedge against inflation. People can self-insure against transitory budgetary shocks. They can take out line of credit. But homeownership also represents access to credit, which means you have usually money or an asset for a down payment, and you also have the appearance of having a steady income to meet your mortgage payments. Those are the two assumptions that are the highest for the default risk and the spiraling of having a problem in being able to maintain your home. So household food insecurity is an interesting marker of household risk, and it would appear that it should appear along the pathway towards homelessness. So just to conclude that this study was able to show that males were hardest hit by the recession, and when you look at the labor market analyses at the time, it's very consistent with that. We are going to be trying to explore what it is about the differing policies affecting either subgroups or perhaps changes in provincial housing markets that might have led to this very different household food insecurity pattern observed in the regions regardless of a recession. To answer our hypothesis, in fact, the impacts of federal mortgage policies were not observed. Unlike, again, the suspicion of what the consequences were in the United States. However, in February 2010, the Government of Canada announced changes to the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation mortgage insurance guidelines. They completely reversed their very free credit access that I mentioned, no down payment, 40 years amortization, to pre-2006. I think recognizing, as I would conclude with, is that Canada, in fact, in economic terms, dodged a bullet in terms of its mortgage housing situation. Thank you. I think we can take questions if there are any now, and then move to the next speaker. It's a little bit different, eh? Yes. All of these factors were all accounting for. So yeah, we've controlled for everything. So we're looking purely at that 10-year phenomenon.
I was wondering because you had these different patterns in the different provinces. Do those map onto differences in, like, social safety net programs or something like that?
Yeah, so so everyone is extremely interested in that Newfoundland-Labrador provincial change where they went from a 26% food insecurity rate to about 17%, and that's been sustained. Both Manitoba and Newfoundland-Labrador embarked on very large anti-poverty initiatives. And they seem to have gotten some incredibly rapid results. That's why I like to study food insecurity, because it's such a rapid response as opposed to other types of things. So we're going to be looking at that. There are other sort of provincial housing markets that could have actually just been crashing as well because of recessionary times, and that might have actually been a buffer. So we'll be exploring that further. But right now, the main work has been trying to look at the anti-poverty initiatives in the various provinces that put them in to see what they've been actually able to accomplish among the most vulnerable. But thank you for that question.
I also have a question. Have you looked into any of the local policies? I know here in the U.S. they have a lot of things like rent control, or seeing how much of the neighborhood income actually goes to housing costs, if there's rising rental costs that may affect the...
Yeah, so I'm giving another talk on all of our housing studies. And so, I mean, what you know about precarious housing is very consistent in Canada and the United States. So the 30% rule is extremely important. So that is the cutoff. Spending more than 30% of your disposable income is one of the big risks for food insecurity. We have been completely deregulating all of our housing stocks so that we have been seeing, you know, almost an absence of rent control. So it's one of the, when I speak to this housing conference, one of the things we want to consider reintroducing in terms of the shock increases that can occur. But I would also say that some complementary work has shown that even housing subsidies and are insufficient to prevent food insecurity when people are extremely poor. They're still not getting enough of that support to get out of food insecurity if you don't have other types of income sources like reasonable welfare rates, reasonable minimum wages. Next question. Thank you.
Is there any programs similar to food stamps in Canada?
No, so Canada doesn't. So we have an income-based solution to poverty. So it's usually around the social assistance, those types of rates. So we have no food, national food stamp program, no national school lunch program, etc. What we do have as a safety net that comes from a charitable sector is the food pantry situation. We call them food banks. And so about a third of those that are food insecure even access them. So our measure is the robust measure that you use in the United States, but we don't have that, and nor do we wish to have that as our solution. We're more of an income-based solution because that's what people need to buy food is income. But but a food insecure person is a food insecure person. Even if they go to a food bank, they still answer the questions, for the year that they've worried about it. They had to change quality, etc. We don't recommend, starting the feeding program. We're worried for you, by the way. I'm at APHA. I can say we're worried for you because you don't have your, when you've had everything based on the SNAP world, you don't have your income supports at all in place for when you take that away from people. Thanks for that little opportunity.